Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. We will start in just a couple minutes.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Thank you. Have a good Labor Day.
Yes. It was nice to have a day. We're not quite at quorum, so I'll give everybody a few minutes to join.
Chris, a question in while waiting.
Mm-hmm.
So beforehand, we sort of using this. Contributions were uploaded to this contribution.
Yeah.
Thing. Now you're kind of collecting them under the JIRAs. Is that correct?
So what I've been trying to do for the last couple of weeks, I've been experimenting taking notes in the JIRAs, I'm still uploading. Contributions to the contributions page,
okay.
Just a link. It's a little easier for me to take notes, and it keeps all the resolutions tied. I learned a couple of tricks. Comments don't get reported up, so I have to put everything in the description, and then use labels to get it attached to a particular week's meeting outcome.
Okay. I need to draw up a version of the JIRA workflow adapted for Setcom. I'm assuming it's pretty similar to yours, actually.
Yeah. Well, we just use to do in progress and done.
Yeah, but they split the done into two parts in the new JIRA flow. Or you can use that in two parts.
I'm just using it with one. I'm putting it in fully closed and not delivered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought the ones where you come to a conclusion and say, okay, here's the recommendation, but the recommendation is not implemented in ONAP as such. I'm going to use it to differentiate between those. Just have the follow-up.
Sure. Okay, it looks like we have quorum, so why don't we get started? So I have four items. On the agenda for today, let's see. JIRA actually did a strange job organizing it compared to when it reports out to the main wiki page instead of when it's in JIRA. So it's the October face-to-face. And now that the TSC elections are completed, the election kickoff process, the ARC organization, this was something that came up on the TSC call. It was just to review some of the operating procedures. And that ties in with the election kickoff as we look for the chair election going forward. And then to conclude will be Dublin planning. Are there other issues that people want to address on today's call if there's time? Okay, so let's start with the October face-to-face. So at the end of last week, Jason Hunt from IBM came through and did find a room for us from the 16th through the 18th. However, I did learn from some of our colleagues in China that they're having visa difficulties trying to get to the 16th and asked if we could move the call or the meeting to the 29th of October. And I wanted to just check with the committee if that's feasible.
Where is this?
This is the one that's in Montreal.
Oh, okay.
Is that feasible if we have to slip it out another 2 weeks to gain greater participation from China?
So it's from when to when?
It would be the week of the 29th. So it would probably
October?
Be of October. Yeah, so it would probably be the Tuesday through the Thursday. You know, if we take what we were planning for the 16th and just move it out 2 weeks, we would start Tuesday midday and go roughly till Thursday midday. This is assuming I can get a room.
This is just the architecture? I've lost track.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm fine.
Oops, sorry, I was speaking on mute. It's fine with me, Chris.
Okay. Do other people have issues? Is this fine with everybody?
Well, is everybody on? I mean, you know,
we got 34 people on the call. It's a pretty good turnout. So, you know, I want to hear if there's feedback on this before I go
but
back to Jason.
You're talking about 3 days. So you're talking about 30th, 31st, and 1st.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll try to make it easy for travel. So probably start midday on the 30th and then go till midday on the 1st. So it's two full days of meetings spread across three calendar days. But that makes, at least for the people on the East Coast, it makes it so that you have fewer nights in a hotel.
Hey, Chris, there is an ONF summit in early November. I was trying to check on the dates in real time. You may want to keep that in mind.
Okay.
I thought I had it on.
Chris, can you help to repeat the date and location because we join later?
Okay.
Thank you.
The plan is to move the meeting out 2 weeks. So the week of the 29th, so it would probably go from the 30th, which is that Tuesday, to November 1st,
no, Chakra,
that Thursday.
Chakra, I think it's December. You think it's November?
I think it's November. I'm looking.
Anyway,
keep going.
I have down.
Keep going. I'm looking for the email. Keep going.
All right.
So, okay. I'll confirm it for you.
So is there an issue with those dates if we moved it to the 30th to the 1st of, so October 30th to November 1st?
I think it looks good to me. I heard from ZT and China Mobile, they can do this later with September. Maybe Ling Li can double confirm this.
Ling Li, if we target that, does that work for you?
Yes.
Okay.
So Chris, this is Mark from DT. So we also want to participate and contribute. And I will double check that and come back to you.
Please, thank you. Yeah, we're trying to get as many people who are interested as possible. I know that especially once you get into October and November, there are a lot of other standards meetings that we're trying to avoid. So if you can, I will get back to Jason and ask him if he can move the meeting out by 2 weeks.
Hey, Chris, it's Adolfo. That weekend is the MEF 18 meeting.
Yeah.
So we won't be able to attend, but I'll go with the majority.
So MEF is that whole week?
Yeah, 29th to the 2nd.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else running into a conflict with MEF?
Hey, Chris, ONS is on November 1st.
ONS?
Yes. The Open Network Summit.
No, I think so.
Which ONS Europe is...
In
a couple weeks. It's the end of September.
No, sorry, OSN, Open Source Networking.
Oh, but what is that?
That is AT&T is hosting in Santa Clara on November 1st.
Yeah, but do we care?
I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm looking at the calendar, trying to find all the events that are taking place during that week. That's all.
Right. So the ONF Connect is what you're talking about, and that's December.
That's December. Yeah. There's an open source networking that is hosted by AT&T on November 1st in Santa Clara.
So you think we're going to get dragged into that because of the whole ONF stuff?
Well, I am, Greg. Some of us are, right? I'm not sure.
What if we do it at the beginning of that week? What if we do it Monday through Wednesday or Monday and Tuesday? So that would be the 29th and 30th.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
does that give people enough travel time?
I think the Monday, Tuesday will work well. I mean, if it'll keep the OSN option open, at least a few of us would be certainly thinking about this. Thanks, Shakar, for bringing it up.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that if we do move it to the week of the 29th, particularly early in that week, we will pick up more people than we lose. Is that what everybody else is hearing as well? Or are there other people who would run into conflicts that we need to consider?
So you're suggesting the 29th and 30th?
Yes.
And this Open Network Summit is when again? 31st?
It's the 1st.
November 1st.
When people could fly out.
Yeah.
And Shakar, where is this? In Santa Clara?
Yes, in Santa Clara. I'll send you. I don't have all the details, but I'm speaking at the conference. That's why I have it on my calendar. But as soon as I have any details, I'll share it with you.
Sounds like a very good reason to have it late in the week, Shakar.
I want to make sure you're too busy to attend.
Okay,
but you could almost go to Wednesday lunchtime then, Chris. Maybe.
I could, and that would still give people time to travel. So I will check with Jason and see. His availability, whether we can move this. I will confirm this with the committee as soon as possible, as soon as we hear back. We'll go from there. So it does sound like moving it will enhance the attendance. So we'll go ahead with that plan. Okay. Next.
And Chris, quick one, the location stays the same, Canada, or any changes there with this?
Yeah, I'm planning that we'll keep it in Canada. Again, for our Chinese colleagues, it's easier for them to get a visa to Canada than to the U.S. these days, so we'll plan to keep the meeting in Canada.
Okay. But is there a host finalized?
Well, there was last week. I got to go back and circle back with the new dates. IBM had offered to host at their center in Montreal. So I just need to check with Jason to make sure that that still holds if we move it out a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Okay. So moving on, next topic is the ARC organization. I wanted to bring this up. This is on the architecture subcommittee wiki page. Based on the discussion that we had on the TSC last week, I wanted to just review how we're operating also talk about the leadership, and then that'll kick off the discussion on the elections. So participating in the ARC meetings, it's open to anyone, people can sign up for slots on the agenda. Anyone who wants to present something can just talk to me or talk to the chair and get a slot on the agenda, and we'll get to you as quickly as possible. This is contribution driven, so we expect that people will develop proposals or presentations and then discuss it during the meetings and via email on the mailing list. Mid-release between M2 and M3, we do the architecture walkthroughs with each one of the PTLs. The formal part, here's the subcommittee purpose. We're responsible for developing and maintaining the functional ONAP architecture. And this helps to inform relationships and interaction between the different modules, including the high-level information flows. And it helps with the project proposals by clarifying the new relationship with the existing components. This is an advisory body, tasked with the high-level architecture and with the information flows through the system. We're basing this on contributions. We have the, it says functional architecture diagram and explanatory material. So we have the PowerPoint deck that we bring to the TSD release. Then we have the architecture walkthroughs with each one of the projects mid-release. If you want to join, we have a mailing list and we have the wiki page for people to sign up. For the leadership, we just have a chair now. As we go forward, I know some subcommittees are considering vice chairs. I wanted to take it to the committee and see if we think we would want a vice chair also, or if the current structure works. With that, I just want to open this up for discussion. Does anyone have comments on the way we're operating here? Do we need to make any adjustments? Anything else that we should consider?
So, Chris, a couple of comments. One is that from Phil as well as Kenny, having a little bit of more formality might also help here. It's, I think in general, this works pretty, it has been working pretty well. We don't have any issue or contention in most cases on this committee, but having a similar or consistent approach on all committee would help. So whatever Phil and Kenny suggest that should be the formula to approve or disapprove certain topic, I think adopting that probably would be helpful. Note that I see that as an issue here, but just want to make it consistent.
Sure. Yes, the first part in that discussion was just for the subcommittees to have the internal discussions, they were going to pull things together through LFN, or excuse me, through ONAP, through the Linux Foundation staff. So I just want to kick off the process here and see if there are any comments here, but definitely we'll play in with what Phil and Kenny are working on.
And second thing, it might help, not here, but it might help to say define subcommittee, architecture subcommittee's purpose. Our purpose is to evolve architecture to meet our members, most service providers' needs and requirements. So the architecture evolution is driven not by contribution, but also driven by the input we receive from our service provider, who say, if only you did this thing, it would be more helpful for me to deploy, or they would like to see this, or like to see. So that's one way of doing, not just the contribution, but their input is very important. And maintaining architecture integrity. So when we see something contribution, which is inconsistent or somewhat opposite of what we have laid out in the architecture principle, and what the members are looking for to make it more deployable, is the guiding principle to see whether that proposal should be incorporated or not incorporated. Because we don't want to just keep saying that it's the contribution driven. It should be most driven by what our community wants to make it a more deployable, usable, extensible platform. So I think we might go through one or two iterations to a more crisply define the purpose of the committee. If people agree, if people think that what we have here is fine, and then I'm okay. That's my input.
Okay.
Yeah, Chris. Hi, Chris. This is Parviz. Vimal, that's a very good point. The question is the input from operators, from carriers, mm-hmm. is that in the form of a well-defined set of requirements that can drive the architecture and the architecture evolution? Could you elaborate on that?
So we did set up a group called Advisory Board. I don't remember, Chris, do you remember the name? Service Provider Advisory Board.
End User Advisory Group, EUA.
User Advisory Group. Yes. And it has just started. I think going forward, I look to that group to really provide what they need. Then, how we evolve that architecture to meet those requirements is this committee's job. And we lay down the architecture and principles, and we work with PTL to make sure that the guidelines, the principle we have said, and the way we want to evolve this architecture to meet our user community need can be implemented in a consistent way. Point here is that I just don't want to say it's contribution driven only. It should not be just contribution.
But I think you need to be careful with one thing there, Vimal. To me, contribution driven is a sort of a common term that reflects that if you want something to progress, some input has to be given. It's not good enough to say that, hey, I would like it to have blue flashing lights and expect everyone else to make the blue flashing lights for you. That's what
So Steve, and I'm not saying that. So that's why I was trying to say the contribution, again, we want to maintain the architecture integrity and the user community's need. And based on that, as of course, we might wish to have certain things, but if nobody's contributing that, then we probably won't go very far. It's still contribution driven.
So one concern I have is the EUAG has only met, I think, once. And they haven't been particularly well organized. So I would be hesitant to make them normative at this point. You know, certainly it would be good if, you know, as that group gets up and running, you know, they come in and say, here are our requirements and make a contribution that can be considered by the committee. You know, that's certainly the intention here. But I don't want to be blocked on something that isn't happening somewhere else.
Chris, I agree. And only thing I was thinking that going forward, I'm hoping that there would be slightly more active and more contribution coming from them. So we have to prod it. I think the same discussion came during the use case subcommittee. And maybe that we bring it up in TSC call to say, look, guys, we really depend on them. We don't want to work in dark and say nobody's using it because we did not deliver what they want. We can't deliver what they want if you don't know what they want.
But I think we have to keep it at high level, though, right? We have to. So there are, I mean, two comments I have. One is that I think the idea of a vice chair is a good idea, at least from my perspective. And the second, and I don't mean to nitpick Chris, but the second sentence, it says this functional architecture helps inform relationships. I think it should read, at least from my perspective, So it helps maintain relationships.
And enforce relationship and maintain.
Yeah. And then, not inform.
Okay.
Just my opinion. And third one.
That's.
I am against the blue flashing lights suggestion.
That's just because
Steve suggested it.
Okay. So other changes.
Chris, on the subject of input, perhaps, I mean, rather than just saying contribution driven, looking for key input from such as where end user advisory committee plays a role. We're not like, you know, again, it's not normative, but at least we're saying they're getting input from them, maybe worth explicitly mentioning, right, to Vimal's point. At least, what are the key sources where we are getting contributions, counting on contributions from, right?
So if we add this, does that...
You could extend it a bit, actually. I mean, input is welcome from everywhere, including EUAG, yes. Right?
Yeah. That's that. I like that. Yeah, Steve. Yeah.
Including blue flashing light cars.
Yeah. Excluded Steve.
I got a feeling I'm going to regret this.
Yeah, you will.
Okay. Great. Anything else?
Hey, Chris, on a serious note, right? Yeah. Just brainstorming. So I think in the charter, maybe it's implied, but there has to be, I'm assuming the architecture committee has to make sure that all the discussions or recommendations or contributions within different components come together, play nicely in the same sandbox. Mm-hmm. And I believe that sandbox has to be the architecture subcommittee, right? Like, for example, just give you an example. Any work that's taken place in the modeling committee that may impact one or more subcomponents, I'm assuming that those discussions would take place in the architecture subcommittee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's implied, or I don't know if we need to be more explicit. But if that's what's implied, I think we need to make sure that it is well understood by everyone.
So is that covered in here, where we talk about using the agreed architecture principles, and that we're trying to work on the end state target architecture plus the evolution, and then how we work with the individual projects? Do you have changes that you'd recommend for this section?
I'm going to look at it. I don't want to do it in real time. Let me take a look at it, and I'll pass on some comments. Thank you.
So if people want a wordsmith, we can also consider additional comments for next week.
Okay.
So
I suppose Shaka's comment about the, I think there's more unification discussion between the modeling subcommittee and architecture becoming more and more important. Mm-hmm. And so I support the Shaka's suggestion to make any wordsmiths about this part of wording and to make by mentioning modeling related topic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Thanks.
Any other feedback on this?
I do have a comment.
Yes.
The relationship between the deliverables and the architecture principles and how the principles really drive an architecture. I mean, we can have a different architecture in every cycle if we just don't follow the principles. So I will suggest that we include a reference to the architecture principles in the purpose, so that we don't have to renegotiate principles every cycle and we end up having the discussion we're having now. So I think that will help us keep a steady pace in of the evolution of the architecture, guided by principles.
Chris?
Yes.
We talk about not going into the architecture side of the projects, and that's correct. Mm-hmm. However, if we're looking for synergy sometimes, maybe we might have some advice on there. I'm not sure we're really ready for that at the moment, but I mean, if we look at sort of data storage alignment or whatever, there could be sort of synergies that may come up. I'm not sure exactly how to word it, but it would form under the, like everything else, under the sort of the nature of advice.
Yes.
So it's not decisions in any case. So.
Do you want me to add something like, but?
So but maybe pointing out synergies or something like that, or identify synergies, maybe.
Something like this?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, I'll save this. If anyone has any suggestions, please either send it to the mailing list or let me know and I'll put you on the agenda for next week. One question going into the election cycle is, do we want a vice chair?
What will we gain from a vice chair? That would be my question.
It's been relatively straightforward. I've been trying to use the chair position to coordinate the meeting times and schedules, and then presentations to the TSC or external bodies as necessary. Just making sure that we have a consistent and agreed upon architecture deck. It hasn't been a ton of work, it's manageable. For a vice chair, I think it would mostly be backup unless we want to do something else with the committee going forward. And that's where I just want to bring it up for input from the rest of the team.
Well, in that case, I do support the idea. I think there is the value to share the load.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so I hear general interest in this. Any other feedback from the team?
Well, I have a question. I mean, you've been doing this. Did you feel you needed a vice chair?
Not particularly. It's been a manageable workload to keep this going. I can go either way.
Well, I mean, that's really the real point. Whoever is chair, do they need a vice chair? If they don't think they need it, then I don't know why they need to do it. Because then you start shifting and you have different styles. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can see from having run this, from the security subcommittee experience, there is a consistent way of having a backup if for some reason it's not possible for you to take a particular meeting due to travel or vacation, which I think is prohibited in your case, Chris.
That's right.
And so on and so on there. So that's a very easy default. But I mean, you tend to create that anyway, so it's not a big deal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what is, Chris, what is, it doesn't harm, yeah? It helps, yeah? It doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. Speaking just personally, I'm not sure it's necessary, but if the committee would like one, I don't have an issue with it.
But I think they have to wear blue flashing lights
on their heads.
So, Chris, what is your proposal then? You're saying that...
I was opening it up for input. If I went for a proposal, I'd say just keep things as they are. It's relatively simple and it's working well enough.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to revert my position based on new acquired data.
Okay. why don't we...
It does avoid a discussion of how do we elect that one then.
Yeah. So why don't we just continue with the structure that we have now, you know, let's kick off the election process now that the TSC elections are complete. What do people need for nomination periods? Do we want to do 1 week or 2 weeks?
Chris, just be a little careful on that one because I thought Kenny wanted to run these now.
Oh, okay.
I thought so. Yeah.
I made this mistake because I kind of kicked it off a little bit on the second one. And he sent an email saying, we want to do it. And that's what got into all. I mean, what we can take a discussion here is what do we want to have as a view of membership? Because that's, I think, the sticking point, because normally since this is the discussion we've been having on the email list.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do we want to, associate what is that, the membership and who can vote? And anyway, it's only one per company as a restriction of that we've put in at some stage, there.
Right. There's that restriction. And Kenny did go through the membership list and color coded it. Let's see. Red is people who would be qualified, but who are not on the mailing list. Green is fully qualified. And then yellow is more than one person from a company is qualified, and they have a way of doing a default. But for assuming we go with this list and methodology, they have a default about who gets the vote for a particular company. If you have any issues within your company, the way they want to do it is talk to Kenny.
Wait, this is voting for everything, or voting for
the chair?
For the chair of all the different committees?
No, for this committee.
No, for this committee.
Not this committee.
Oh, for this committee. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. The list is on the wiki.
Yeah.
It's from the main architecture subcommittee link.
So, Chris, the red people can vote or they cannot?
That's what Kenny is trying to follow up. To figure out.
I believe there is one vote per company, so other people. So whoever is the delegate or default is the one that can vote.
Oh, yeah. This is one.
The red are people who have signed up for the committee, but who have not signed up for the mailing list. So Kenny is not sure if they're active or not, and he's doing a follow-up on that.
I think it's pretty hard to be. Not impossible, but it's hard to be active if you're not on the mailing list.
Exactly. Yeah.
But what you might want to do, Chris, maybe, I mean, allow, I'm just thinking out loud here. So allow, of course, Kenny to kick it off and inform him that, but maybe you want to sort of send an email and saying, okay, we've got 1 week to make sure your name is correct on that. And then you'll be getting back to Kenny or something like that.
Yep. Great. We'll do. And just to the committee, take a look at this list and see if your name is on there correctly. And if it isn't, add it and then let Kenny know so that he will process it correctly when we kick off the elections.
Since I'm not following this, who got elected for TSC?
Let's do that offline. It's mostly the same companies. There were three people that got changed.
No, I meant chair.
That hasn't been
Done yet.
Oh, that hasn't been done yet. Okay, never mind. That's all I care about, not who's on the committee.
Yeah.
That's so harsh, Margaret.
Definitely not.
Okay.
Not Steve.
Chris, this is Parviz.
Yes, Parviz.
One thing that came up over the last year or so is when we talk about architecture, how much of the detail should be captured in the high-level architecture diagram? Is that something that we need to talk about, or you're okay with that?
Well, it's always something for the committee. I'm okay with what we've been showing because I think it ties in with our role as advisory. If we think that we need more explanatory material going deeper, that's certainly something that we can consider, and it is part of our charter to produce that material if we want to.
Yep. To add on the like the detail of APIs, normally we would go to PTLs and say, okay, what are the set of APIs you're planning to implement for the next release? And they give us a list of those APIs.
Right.
Now, and then is that the process we follow going forward, or we need to define those APIs and then have the PTLs to get their buy-in?
I think really we need to take the input from the PTLs. You know, we want to provide guidance up front if there's an architecture, you know, direction that we think the projects need to take collectively. But then we put it back to the project teams to do that implementation, and then to come back to us with the APIs. And we just, you know, if they have any questions about how they relate to other projects, we answer them. And we help with the reviews, but we give them the authority to develop their own APIs.
Okay, is that implicit or explicit in the subcommittee charter? I don't recall.
That's explicit. It says that we're advisory, and that we're not making project decisions.
How about the detail that you mentioned, like we wait for the PTLs for their input, blah, blah. Is that
That's
somewhere?
Yeah. Feel free to review this. This is the Architecture Subcommittee Wiki page, and if there's a way to clarify it, you know, please come back with a proposal.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chris?
Yes.
Sorry, one more question when you're onto the topic of organization. We have... If you move up, you have the Tiger teams and task forces, you call them here, and call different things sub-teams, so Tiger teams and so on. What we haven't done is taken a discussion about the life cycle of those. Because should they be permanent teams, or should we dedicate specific questions to a particular team, and when that question closes, we close it up? Or
Good question. Yeah, I was looking at these as, well, I guess it depends. S3P is a long-term item within ONAP, and I think that's going to need, you know, long-term continuity. The API common versioning, I think, is short-term. And I think the Architecture Tiger team was planning to wrap up soon. So that's kind of a medium term. And the microservices, I think, is still early in their exploration. So I think there's more work to be done there.
I think the question was, should they be permanent, or should they, means if we say the microservice team is to address this problem when they are done, that committee goes away. I think that was the question Stephen was asking, if I understand.
Yeah, so I think it kind of depends on the different topic and the interest level. You know, whether this is a project that's easy to solve, or something a little bit more open-ended. If we need to put some more formality around that, we can. Right now, these are mostly just interest groups of people who want to go collect ideas and then come back to the architecture subcommittee for review and for incorporation into the long-term architecture.
I could just suggest a few things. I think, of course, we need such a construct because we need a way to parallelize the work. Otherwise, it becomes a sort of funnel there. So I think that's fine there. I think we could put some wording around this and so that people, if they're new to this, can be aware that, okay, we've got this particular activities you can go to here. The outputs of that always come back through the architecture team. And maybe we need actually a definition of done for what these are. And that definition of done might be somehow in the whenever that is, but then we know the purpose of it there. I think that's a little bit missing sometimes.
Okay, great. Steve, can I ask you to take an action item and bring back a proposal?
I have a volunteer, but it was Shaka.
No, he has two proposals, this one and the blue light.
Maybe they can be combined. The blue light task force.
Combine the two together.
Okay, Chris, I can try to propose.
Thank you. Great.
Would you like it by email, or would you like me just to put it on the page?
Put it on the page and just mark draft, okay. And then we can discuss it next week. Great. Anything else on this before we move on? Okay. So let me change shares. And go back to Dublin planning. We talked about this last week. We talked about a theme of global scalable deployment, which is closely linked to the deployability that we focused on now. Making sure that this is global and fits operators around the world. We talked about some of the different pieces that fit into the overlap between the circles. I want to spend about 5 minutes on this if there are any updates to this diagram. And then I want to go into brainstorming for topics that we want to discuss over the next, 2-3 months in preparation for Dublin. So first, here's where we ended up last week. I'll put this into screen share mode. Are there any updates or suggestions around this diagram?
Last time Chakra made his point about model driven, that's where you added the bullets on the orange box, yeah. Chris. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if Chakra's point was that model driven should be a circle as opposed to just a bullet point. I wasn't sure about that. Chakra, can you speak to what you were suggesting?
So, and I mean, that's fine. That's fine being a bullet item, but the essence of my point is that, and the reason that we call it model driven is that you really don't need to, we need to get to a point where a service can be created without any significant changes to any of the components.
And I think that's one of the most important characteristic property of ONAP is to really, yeah. It's service agnostic, it's resource, you define a model, you can bring a new VNF, just define a new model, there's no need to change any of the components.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important. So whether we want to spell that out as a separate circle, there are other artists principle, but I do think you can meet all the things that's given in this these three circles and still not be model driven. And that's the part that's missing. That's why.
Yeah. That's right. That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I would tend to think cloud native maybe should be a bullet and model driven should be the circle. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe there's another, or maybe, yeah. But I agree that I mean, it's fundamental to what ONAP is.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the suggestion is put.
And just to follow up on this though, right, on the point, as we move forward into Dublin, yeah. I'll wait, Chris.
Okay.
Okay, and Shakar, just to make sure I understand what you're saying, are you referring service as in network service?
That's where I was going.
Okay.
That's where I was going. So, thank you. So I think we need to pause for a second and make sure that we all understand what service means the same way. Service in this case is to Vimal's point, right? Service is driven by the VNF SDK providing a standard template into service design and creation to actually orchestrate a service.
So is it, so I 100% agree, Chakra, that we have to define and make sure we're all in sync in terms of what is a service and what is service, you know, creation, model-driven behavior. But probably not for this slide, right? What we want is, we want just something that's generally, so could we say model-driven service and resource creation, or?
More than creation, that's the point I was thinking, that because even the complete life cycle, it's model-driven, what I collect, what I analyze, and what constitute an exceptional condition that need to be addressed, and all that is model-driven, so DC is model-driven.
Exactly.
Whole ONAP is a model-driven platform, a complete life cycle management.
Do we want to differentiate between customer-facing and resource-facing services if we're talking about services also? We need both, right?
Yes.
We're about to touch on a topic that could take us into a whole nother, an hour, right? So really what we're saying is we want model-driven ONAP behavior, right? We want to introduce new services, new resources, new capability. Well, not new services, new resources, without having.
Then
to
let's
touch
call
the
them customer-facing services. If we're going to be clear,
I don't think we all agree to that terminology, Fred. I think if we insist on any specific terminology, I think we're going to open up a huge discussion.
Yeah.
Just like model, I do think we need to mention policy. The rationale is, if you look at the way we are, you know, looking at VNF descriptors, given that modeling progresses extremely slow, the task of modeling, we're actually driving them through policy, right? For HPA or for cloud agnostic intent. So I think it's important to be, I would almost say model and policy driven is where we are and where we will be. Probably, even a better way to capture it.
Unless you consider a policy as a model.
I know, but
it's also how we are doing things is basically a combination of both. It's not always one task or model we're defining, especially on the resource front, right? That's not where we are, and we don't see that happening right away.
I agree, though, Ramke, right? But the point that I'm making is a little bit, slightly different, right? And the point that I'm making is that there seems to be, we have not defined what we mean by service within ONAP. Therefore, we've created a confusion. There are some people that believe that the service that ONAP is creating is a customer-facing service. There are people that believe that the service is an infrastructure service. Basically, what I'm saying is, let's make sure that we have a clear definition based on the model-driven concept that ONAP supports.
I agree.
Why don't we target that as a discussion topic for the next couple of weeks? Shocker, would you be willing to put something together and present on that?
Yeah, I could do that. Not next week, a week after. Yeah, I could.
Sure. I'll put it down here just so that we capture it.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, this is Roger. One of the things that might help guide us here is the operator requirements. So, you know, we have a page for operator requirements. And, you know, if I look through that list of requirements, there's only a very minor comment on microservices, really. And yet it seems to be an important part of the architecture going forward. I wonder just how aligned architectural changes are with what our customers or users really want. Right? Is there a way we could maybe more formally align it to requirements?
So Chris, if I can answer this question slightly, and then you can ask. In my view, microservice is a solution, not a requirement. The requirement is to make a platform more agile, easy to maintain, easy to modify, and easy to deploy. Those are the requirements, and we think those requirements can more effectively be met by using microservices. Microservice is not a requirement by itself, but microservice is a solution to meet operators' requirements. Chris,
yeah, I think that's well said. You know, if you look at where the industry is going, you know, we can't just be followers on this. We can't just be collecting operator requirements, because if we do, you know, we'll get out of sync with the rest of the industry. You know, this is the Henry Ford comment about if you ask the customers what they want, they'd say a faster horse. So
yeah, what's wrong with that?
I'm not into horses, but I am into having something that solves real world problems.
Absolutely, right.
It should be traceable back to a business.
We should have a significant part of our objective is solving real world problems and not ones we've invented ourselves. Maybe microservices is not a good example. I just brought that out, but if there was a more general way of us correlating our work back to what our customers are telling us they want, then I think we might be more successful overall.
Right. So you trace them back to business requirements, and customers would say they want to get from point A to point B, and then you can propose a car instead of a horse. But if you don't understand sort of what their killer needs are, then it's hard to do that.
Yeah, so I agree with both Roger's comment and your comment. Basically, a customer tells us what they want, not how, and we try to answer how part. And also to add on to Roger's comment is, every time we do something, let's ask our question, how does that thing we are trying to do advances what customers are looking for, directly or indirectly? And if it doesn't advance what customers are looking for, then why are we doing it?
Well, the issue that I have with this argument, though, is, or with this point, is the fact that we never clearly defined what the platform capabilities are. So the ask from the customers is based on their own understandings. Give you an example. And some customers believe that the services that ONAP orchestrates are customer-facing services that provide real service to the customers. So with that understanding, the ask from the customer is going to be something that the platform would never be able to support. If you go beyond,
We're planning the fourth release, though, right? We've had operational experience. We should be able to get feedback based on that. They've used it. What do they really want to be able to use it for? I've been reading books on Lean. All about getting that feedback loop. Because if you ask them, they don't always know. But if they use it, they go, you know what? What I really need is this. Or you find out they use this feature, but they don't use this other feature. And things about scalability and some of these other features, you don't need those until you have sufficient deployment that people are going, gosh, it's running too slow because I'm using it so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For example, a common requirement is security. So to blow Stephen's horn here, right, that's a fundamental part of the architecture is how do you provide security, kind of RBAC security, but maybe API security. Right, that's not. There's some experiments going on, but I'm not sure that we have a solid architecture for that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Chris.
That's fair.
This part, Chris. One thing that probably we did not include here is how to close up the gap between the telco mindset and what we are seeing and hearing from the cloud providers' perspective. So Roger mentioned microservices. So microservices is important, yeah? But people are not embracing that in ONAP. because we are going back and forth and say, oh, microservices, who is going to do it? We have PTRs, we don't have resources, blah, blah. So the telco mindset is gradually shifting towards like a cloud native microservices and so on. So how we can capture that in a very nice manner that we don't really tick off that legacy mindset.
But so what problem are you solving there, though? Because going back to the getting the operational experience part is, if you did release one with a spaghetti architecture and then you had to rewrite it later once you proved it was useful, that's not the end of the world.
Well, maybe we're confusing best practices with, you know, requirements, right? And so I think, you know, you can say implementation. We want to see utilization, maximum utilization of microservice for meeting the business reasons and so on, and reusability. But, you know, that, again, is tied to reusability clause, right? So maybe we can figure out a way of handling both later on. But I think we're getting a little distracted here, right? Well, let's get back to the finishing this slide now.
Yeah, I think that's a difference between the what and the how, as we were saying. You know, I think we need to be thinking about the how, and from a sense of where the industry is going, and the customers may or may not know that. But you know, clearly the what, you know, the requirements that they have around security or you know, geo redundancy, if that came up, or
but policy. You know, just to the point, cloud native, right? That already implies it. And here's what cloud native is comprised of, you know, reusability, blah blah blah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right. So any other comments on this slide? Can we lock it down for now and then move on, or do we need to make any other adjustments? Okay. So let's go into the next two. The focus that we have is global scalability. I put some words around it. We can change this. So this can be scaled to support global deployments, which includes the Federation delegation, and Edge Cloud, and Cloud Native.
Chris, is it Dublin global scalability focus or Casablanca?
It should say Dublin. Sorry. Thank you.
So this is a platform scalability, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is an ONAP platform scalability that may not be related to VNF scalability.
Right.
Okay. So, for example, just to make sure that we're on the same page, for example, how would we scale SO, or how would we scale ANAI?
That would be covered by this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Can we just try to put it in as an example, and you know, these two components that I just mentioned, Chris?
So at least add the ability to have multiple instances. So for example, you might want to have 5 instances of DCAE spread throughout your network.
Yes. That would be the similar example, right, Roger?
It's similar, but there's two different implementations, right? You can make DCAE big, that would span multiple locations and have still mm-hmm. one instance of it, or mm-hmm. you could have actual multiple instances of those components, and not just DCAE.
So something like this, just examples, component scalability, maybe for SO or ANAI, and then multi-instance like we were talking about for DCAE.
Yeah, both need to be there.
Yeah.
Chris?
Yes.
There's been a lot of talk about scale up. What about scale down?
Why don't we put this on the brainstorming list?
Wait, is that why we're questioning to do scale down?
No, I think when we say scale up, I think Steve's point is, I think, and I agree, that it should not be just keep scaling up. It should also be possible to say it's time to scale down because I'm not using all the resources I'm getting.
But I also go a little bit further and talk about minimum footprint as well.
Yeah.
We can be very good at making mechanisms for making the biggest muscle car with blue lights in the world, but sometimes you need a motorbike.
It's really not scaled down to the minimum. Minimum
footprint.
Okay, I will put that on the list. So anything else here? Either the description for global scalability or the architecture priorities that support this?
Just it's a question on the terminology here, because when you're talking about global scalability, I thought that was for global adoptability. And now we've turned that scaling into...
Global scalable deployment, yeah. So maybe I should use the same term.
So Chris, are you also implying federation?
Yes, that was one of the bullets here.
Yeah, the multi.
Okay.
Multi-instance.
One question is doesn't this automatically imply VNF deployment scalability or?
No, this is a platform.
Yeah, that's the platform.
I meant was if you can scale SO to, for example, deliver more service requests per second, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. You can scale, then mm-hmm. automatically wouldn't it mean VNF can be deployed at scale? No, I'm just talking VNF deployment.
It would depend on the VNF.
Yeah.
Yes.
But not all VNF can say I can have multiple instances to scale it because I have PCRF. Means I can't have this multiple unless they are federated. So can PCRF be scaled because I need to have policy for all my subscriber, all my customer? Is PCRF VNF a scalable PCRF VNF or not? Hopefully it is, but I don't think that implies. Here, focus on the term scalability.
But yet there is another challenge with the scalability at the VNF level, right?
Yeah.
If you scale the VNF, the assumption is that when you scale it, you bring it up to the current state. That's not part of what ONAP does, or at least it's not today, right?
No, I think maybe I read that. I think you're spot on with the definition of VNF scalability. I was thinking of expressing it differently. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of, I'm not really talking about VNF scalability, but the number of VNFs that can be deployed. Them. That's what I meant. Is there a way of expressing it?
The instances, you mean? Number of instances?
Yes, exactly. VNF. Number of instances.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. And that would be part of the template, right? So let's say, for example, you want to deploy, your initial deployment calls for 2 load balancers and 10 firewalls, right? That would be part of your service creation and deployment. Right. Yeah.
I mean, you can just create more units of the same and then manage them, but yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Does this capture?
So Ramki and Shakar, instead of saying VNF scale, VNF is just one piece. It is my global network. If I'm a big service provider, I don't have 100 VNFs only. I have 100 types of VNF and maybe thousands of copies of each one. Can ONAP support such a large network? That's the scalability we're talking about. So can it, and I don't know how to capture that to say that my network is fairly large, distributed globally. Can ONAP be deployed in a way that can manage my network effectively?
Maybe mention service scalability, Vimal. Just service, because you're talking about a network service, right, really, at that point, at scale.
I didn't want to say that because then Gil will say, do we know what is service or do we
have? Blame Gil. Poor Gil.
I'll keep my mouth shut for 5 minutes.
So I think the key thing is really, if I am a service provider and fairly large network, if my platform can only support a very small, tiny network, then it's not very useful for me.
So Vimal, you're bringing in an interesting point, right? And the point is, how many instances, how many service instances can one ONAP deployment support?
Yeah, rather than defining hard rules, it should be cost effective for me to deploy ONAP based on my needs. So say, for example, Vodafone says, I have 17 independent semi-autonomous operations. I want 17 instances to be managing their network. Whereas something but like AT&T say, I have one large network, but I want to support that using cost-effectively using one instance of ONAP where I can have multiple copies of SO or DCAE or ANI if needed, or controller. But I should be able to scale it in a very cost-effective manner, not force me to say, only say you can support a network of 1,000 elements each, therefore you need 4 copies of ONAP federated. That won't be, so I don't want to prescribe or give a result, but should be, it said that it should be support global scalable network.
I agree. I think the scalability, a way to look at it, right? Maybe a different way to look at it is to look at the operational profile of the service or the deployment, and then determine whether one copy or multiple copies of ONAP would support a specific service provider. And the reason I say this is because ANAI is very critical in this discussion. If you need to have a global view of every VNF that or instance that you have deployed, then you have to have a common or a fully integrated or federated ANAI to give you that global view of the VNFs that you have deployed or orchestrated.
I wasn't trying to give a one solution. All I'm saying is that different operations will have different operational needs, and we should have a platform that can meet that requirement in a very cost-effective manner. It's not forcing them to spend lots of money just to meet their large network.
Okay.
So yeah, we need to make some changes here. Do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I'm Vimal, I'm a bit lost with your comment about the size of the network. Well, the size should not really determine which flavor of architecture you use, yeah?
No, so supervise, I don't know if I said that properly. What I'm saying is that if I have a ONAP is that way, but let's say ONAP is a platform that can easily support 1,000 VNFs and network of 1,000 VNFs, but not more than that. That's not a very scalable platform. Or ONAP can only support 100,000. And ONAP can only support single instance, cannot be federated, because somebody might say, I do have 3 operations, east, west, and central, and I want to have 3 ONAP need to be federated. Point is that ONAP should provide a flexible way to meet different people's requirement to manage large network using a single instance, federated instances if needed.
Yeah, just like federation of AT&T East and AT&T West, which is captured under federation. Then you have the hierarchical. Yeah, the hierarchical nature is through the delegation, but like the SODU scenario.
With what I'm saying is if AT&T say, we want to have a single ONAP instance because I don't have a geographic, any regulatory requirement, I don't have semi-autonomous operations like Vodafone and Orange might have, but I have a single, but don't force me just to scale ONAP, don't force me to say, you have to divide your operation into three different regions, just like what Sasha was saying. I need to have a single instance supporting large network of my AT&T sites or even somebody else's sites.
So do you want to add a new bullet item here?
How about if I do this? So we want to support both federation and delegation for operators that need that, and then single instant large networks for operators who go a different path.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Anything else on this slide?
Okay, Chris, one thing about microservices and service mesh. I thought that they all go together or they are separate.
They're separate. Well, I think service mesh is, you have to have microservices if you want to go to service mesh, but I don't think you need service mesh to go to microservices.
No. Service mesh is connectivity. Yeah. So right. I don't know. You want to put them separate. When you have microservices, then you need to think about service mesh. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they synergize well, but I don't think that they're contained in the same bullet necessarily. You could do them separately.
Okay.
I would agree with Chris because we don't know what is the actual problem statement for microservices as of now, right? So once we make it clear, maybe we can combine them. But for now, keeping them aside. As two different things are good.
Okay. So now I'd like to go on to the brainstorming and get a list of topics that we would need to cover over the next few weeks. And then ideally an owner for each one to go off and put together a presentation. I started with the list that we had from Casablanca, the things that we haven't done already, and then I tried to add a few from our discussions during the planning process. So this is just really a starting point for discussion. I'd like to have any additional topics and anyone who'd like to present on any of these that don't have a name next to them. Let's have that discussion.
Hey, Chris, just a thought.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what the point that Vimal was making.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we should have it as a use case.
Okay.
To try to see how it would be possible to use ONAP to deploy hundreds of VNFs, thousands of VNFs, or many thousands of VNFs.
Should I phrase it this way?
I just want to get Vimal's feedback as well.
So on this hesitation I have, when I say use case, then Helen would come and say, how do I demonstrate that? And say, how do you demonstrate thousands of VNFs or 100,000 VNFs? And that's why I get...
Maybe we could do the paper exercise though, Vimal, because I think there is something there that we need to flush out, right? Not only from an orchestration perspective, but from a reinstantiating perspective in case there is a regional outage. How would SO reorchestrate all these failed VNFs at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think user stories and some demonstration or some guidance to say SO can support, or let's say if somebody comes and says AT&T says on a day or per hour I get 5,000 requests for SO, can SO single instance of SO scale up to that level? Mm-hmm. So some user stories might probably be a good idea, but rather than a use case, because use case, if I say use case, then somebody will say, how do we demonstrate that use case during the release? We can't.
Okay.
Hey, Vimal, are you trying to see ONAP as a central orchestration platform is covering all the millions of devices attached to the edge and the regional operations?
And we don't, hopefully we don't have millions of devices. When you say millions of, we have 100 million or 140 million subscribers, that's something I don't manage. AT&T manages network elements or the network, and that network has maybe 100,000 locations with a few hundred thousand network elements. And there could be millions of CPE, but when you say end devices, sometimes end devices could mean UE that we don't manage.
Well, through this edge automation, I guess that doesn't cover the size of the network, like hundreds of thousands or even millions. Maybe.
Just because I have edge doesn't make it scalable. Because as cloud is doing the infrastructure level cloud orchestration, the request or the origin service request start from SO. Can SO support the volume of data that or request I'll get per hour or per minute?
Chris, maybe we should explicitly mention the SO scalability and handling,
but
being able to handle, yeah?
But Parviz, SO was just an example, as Sagar said, can ANAI handle
ANAI
or policy or DCAE, we already talked about, we can have multiple copies of DCAE and maybe central DCAE. But each component will have a different solution to support a large network using a single instance or a federated.
But where is the bottleneck? With your experience, you see that every single component, they have the same restriction in terms of scalability, or SO is just in the heart of it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have numbers to say either way, unless somebody else from SO team or controller team or policy team can say.
So let me just capture this. And I ask if someone from AT&T can do a readout for the user story about the single instance large scale and talk about any of the limitations that you're facing right now. And then we can just track this item going forward.
Sure.
Okay. Chris, where is the intent captured here?
We don't have that yet. I can put it down.
Yep, please.
Anything else? So do we need something on service mesh? We have the Kubernetes support, but we didn't explicitly call out service mesh.
Yeah, Chris. I thought it was there in the previous slide, so I think.
Yeah. This is just this. So these were some of the bullets that we want to work on, and this slide five is the topic list for the next, say.
Okay, in which case, service mesh is a good topic to have, but let's not combine them because KTA support is meant for containerized VNF.
Okay.
There are service mesh meant to improve the platform, ONAP platform itself. Okay.
So we had, Chris, we had this Clover project to only help with the CI/CD through spin a call. What is beyond that? Is that service mesh, full-blown service mesh for deployment aspects?
That would be something we can bring Wenjing back. So far, the talk was about using that for the CD process for ONAP components,
yeah.
And we've stayed out of VNFs. I know that on the OPNFV side, they've also talked about doing Clover for VNFs. So that may be something that could tie in with number six. I can at least make a note.
So, Chris, now, number six. Sorry, go ahead, please.
Yeah, one more thing, Ron, a quick follow-up. There is a huge movement in industry that links the Istio and Envoy, the service mesh, the tools to the network telemetry. So is that captured here? That is really a very active discussion, even as of last few weeks. Google had a huge splash on that.
I think it fits right here in the number 7.
Okay, so we can say network telemetry and the use of Istio/Envoy, at least as an example.
Yeah, I think this would also capture distributed Agar everything. I think that's the megalith.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's meant for.
Ramki, I saw from the back you were attending one of those meetings. Yeah. So you should have the updates.
Okay.
Just a thought, wondering, perhaps should we capture something on sort of service rollback troubleshooting? Because if things go wrong, I don't know where we are with respect to, finding out what went wrong, where, especially with respect to deployment.
Okay.
We'll find the right person. I just brought it up. I may not be the authority on this.
They'll teach you to ask question next time.
Oh, shoot.
But this is a good question though, right? Because I attended one of the meetings last week and somebody was creating, and I apologize, I don't remember the person or the company. They were creating a dashboard for the workflow engine, Komunda.
Yep.
Right, maybe, perhaps this is a part of the, should be part of this discussion.
That was the...
I think somebody...
It was Booyong and the team there.
Yes, it was a very good presentation. It was an excellent presentation for how you can follow the progress of the orchestration of a specific service through the dashboard.
Yeah, it's to do with the observability of what's going on there from the owner perspective.
Absolutely. And you could go back. That allows you to go back and look at the history, right? If I recall it correctly.
That's one of those things you need if you're going to go with production properly, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Anything else?
Yeah, Chris, John from AT&T.
Yeah.
I think one item possibly is related to this, the federation and a lot scale is actually a platform data management layer. Like today we use multiple databases and it's like consolidating them. OOM is taking that first step in creating the database as a service. So
I think that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I guess we should also have the,
John, assign it to John.
Speaking of John, so steering the name in brackets here, we started with a bit of a discussion around the controllers and the personas, and I think we need to settle that and in terms of what we want to bring into what personas we want to bring in and how do we want to deal with that from an architectural description perspective and use cases perspective. No. this is a negative, unstable control loop. You do realize that.
Steve, congratulations.
Yes.
We can change who presents this, but
exactly.
I want to capture who's proposing it.
That's good.
So that we at least have owners
reference point,
to make sure everybody's covered.
Yeah. I would volunteer Vimal for that.
Okay.
I don't mind helping with
that.
I've already started with that, so I just need to revise my work there. I'm not sure I'll do very much on the scale down minimum footprint. That's not my forte, but I think it's important.
Chris?
Yes.
Chris, I just have a clarification question on the user stories number 1. Is single instance large deployment, that is a single instance of a VNF or what? Single instance of what?
Of an ONAP platform.
ONAP platform.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Chris is Srini here. Is service function chaining a candidate for doubling? I mean, I know that it may be, every time I talk about the SFC, people say that it is too early for ONAP. So I'm just wondering whether that could be discussed.
Let's put it on a list, and then we can cover that.
So what that means?
I mean,
for which change. Service, like GI LAN for mobility or what?
For many things, like for example, for security, you know, whenever there is a VNF gets spun up, you may want to secure it using, you know, firewall, IPS, and, you know, in that case, automatically these services need to be, these VNF service, security VNFs need to be brought up automatically. That kind of service function chaining in a transparent way.
But this has nothing to do with NSH screening, yeah?
This is nothing to do with the ONAP or network service. It's something to do with building, you know, multiple VMs in a chain fashion.
Because in IETF, hold on, IETF, they already developed NSH. Are you linking this to NSH or no?
I mean, NSH could be one implementation aspect of it. Yeah, but NSH is part of SFC umbrella. Yeah.
But this comes into also the intersection of the definition of the service. I mean, there is a definition of a service, and that talks about the resource topology, and that talks about what VNFs can come into that. So there's an intersection between what you're describing here and really how things have to work if you're focused on your services.
But I claim that this is a service creation, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, if you want a service chain,
but this is where I'm getting to, Shaka. Yeah. So I think I agree with you for some time today.
Well, Steve,
you
there
always
are
agree,
three
buddy.
Use cases, yeah.
Yeah.
So there are three use cases that were identified in IETF for service chaining. Srini, do you have anything beyond those three use cases that are already documented by IETF? Or is this is something new?
No, it is same as what IETF SFC kind of documented and what OpenStack and ODL implemented. But we just need to ensure that those can be orchestrated from ONAP.
And back to Shaka, your point, is this like end-to-end service aspects or the network services? Because it could be both.
No, an example, if you have a virtual probe that you want to attach to a firewall,
yeah,
that's service chaining, right? So you could design it. That's how you design the service. You decide how you design the service, how you need to create the connectivity between the VNFs based on the service design and creation and how many instances. So I claim that you could provide, in today's environment, you could basically design a service and you could chain a service using the existing platform.
Yeah, but is this go to SDC for the template or you can insert it in the middle?
No, it's you could create a service within SDC, and the output from it would be a Tasker template that basically creates that orchestrates the service for you.
Yeah, that was my point. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. I don't know if you saw the message from Roger in the chat group for related to number 14.
Let's see.
Yeah, number I can 14. Take over the. I'm not sure that John's working on the database as a service, so I can do that, or I'll find someone else from the OO team to do it.
Great.
Okay, good.
One additional
Chris,
point,
do you think for item 13, we probably need some of the PTLs, maybe perhaps have Seishu maybe? Otherwise, it will not be very, yeah.
If we could remember, hey, Steve, sorry. Should we list the person that presented the dashboard, the Komodo dashboard here as well? And then
sure, yeah. I'm just saying I was hoping Seishu can coordinate, but yeah.
Fine. Hey, what about Etsy third-party VNF manager compliance?
The VNF SDK, you mean?
Not just the SDK, but hooking up to a third-party VNF. We have multiple ways to do that with a VFC and a GILS. I'm not sure where your proposal is.
Do you mean the VNFM? The SVNFM? VNFM.
Yes.
You mean rationalizing those, Roger? Or
yeah, it's been a hot topic. I don't know where it stands and whether it's closed or not.
Okay. I'll put your name on it, Roger, just to have traceability for who's proposing this.
I think there is a bit more work to do on the Etsy alignment as well, but I'm still thinking of what we should bring up for Dublin there.
Right. So Vimal, where are we at for 5G? Do we need any additional functionality or capabilities for supporting nested services? Or are we still thinking of, specifically, are we still thinking in terms of segment, slice segments being predefined and then comprised into slices? Because if we are, then that would be like some sort of a nesting we need to work on as well.
So we just got the 3GPP model for slices, and we have to see how to translate that into ONAP requirement and ONAP models. But I don't want to make this as a use case specific, because 5G is just one of the use cases, many use cases. But I think having this to say globally, we want to, what are the key platform enhancements we want to make it more globally deployable, scalable.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's nothing on here. I think when we talk about federation up top, we aren't talking about, I don't think we're talking about service federation or nesting specifically.
No, it's a platform federation. It's all platform.
Right. So if we want to, if we need it for 5G, then we might want to consider some additional work in terms of nested services.
Yeah, Gil, the nested services is a good fit for the orchestration delegation, not federation, because federation has external APIs, you can handle that. So nested services is mainly for using, like, in a scenario that you have this SODO, which is delegation, that's federation, yeah? Correct?
Well, not necessarily. You could have, even within a non-federated ONAP, you could have nested services, right?
No, that's specific delegation, part. You know this, orchestration delegation.
Well, so in the 5G use case, there are slice segments which are predefined, like within a RAN. You know, I define a slice segment type, and I deploy it within a specific metro, or I create instances of it within a metro.
A subslice.
Subslice, right? It's like the RAN subslice, and you have a core subslice. Then you go back in that same metro, and you define slices which attach those two together. So that's not like in a core edge or a regional versus domain specific ONAP. That's just within a single ONAP, I'm managing a service, which is the slice, which is comprised of other service types, which are the slice segments or the whatever you call it, Steve.
Subslices, yeah, I think that's the term.
Yeah.
So the notion of the facade resource that you were talking about, mm-hmm. that is not applicable to orchestration delegation? I thought that was the main target.
It's applicable in many different ways, yeah. Okay. But it's not limited to domain orchestration, no. It is applicable to domain orchestration, but it's not limited to that.
Okay. Great. We have quite a list going here. Anything else that we want to talk about over the next few weeks?
What's release A called?
It was something from Bolivia, L something. I can't remember. I think we should make it easier and change it to Edmonton, but I think that goes back to the marketing committee. El Amin or L something. I can't remember.
I was just a comment on the ambition that we can have in the time frame we have. That was all.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of this won't make it into Dublin for sure, but at least we can start moving on it from the architecture committee perspective. The things that are ready, we ask the PTLs to consider. The things that are not, we keep talking about.
Well, Chris, one clarification on item 10, the model driven. So do we have in Dublin release within the scope that we are going to tackle the information model rather than just the data model? Is that in the scope for Dublin?
Isn't that a question to the modeling?
Yeah. Is Deng Hui still on the call?
Just assign it to Pravis.
No.
I like the pattern when I'm not talking.
Andy is on the call. I think Andy can answer.
Yeah, so that's very important, yeah.
So Parvis, your question is, do we need to address both the information and data model? And that's true, we do.
Is that in the scope of Dublin, correct, or no?
For the service model, the resource model, both?
Okay. My view is a bit different. Information model, it doesn't matter if service or resource.
Well, it does, because the information model, it has a scope, right? So it's what do you want to represent in your global information model so that it represents common semantics throughout the whole platform?
Like UML. UML is totally agnostic to how you implement that,
right.
How you model it at the lower layer.
That's true.
Is that in the scope for Dublin?
Yeah, we're doing that now. We're doing UML modeling right now. Yes.
Okay. All right. So Chris, that is the answer is yes. So I'll put Andy's name next to that because Andy's trying. Yeah, Andy.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'll just put that down.
Hey, Andy. So I think it will may be helpful, and I don't know if Dongui is on as well. At some point, I think it would be, at least it would be helpful for me, it may be helpful for everybody else, is trying to understand what do we mean by, let's say, for example, data model as it relates to service design and creation versus orchestration versus ANAI. Because we have been, it seems to me that we're talking a little bit in abstraction, but when I go back and look at the data model within SDC and the data model within SO or ANAI, or for that matter, SDNC, I think at some point we need to consolidate what's being done in data modeling and map it directly to the ONAP components.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and the APIs as well. So you have model-driven aspects that, kind of are payload on the APIs, but then you have API behavior.
Absolutely,
yeah. And that goes back to your model-driven bullet.
Exactly, right? Because the key moving forward is, for example, and let's assume that everything is driven by service design creation. Let's assume at some point I want to add yet another data type in service design and creation. We would need to understand as a team how we would propagate the change to the rest of the components. And what is the impact to the rest of the components in terms of being each and every component being able to handle that new data type?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Hey,
I can talk to you offline as well, Andy, but I mean, that's what I'm thinking, in real time, that's what I'm thinking in terms of adding new capabilities in the future and how that would impact the entire platform. Sorry, Pravis, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I got one clarification. That's a very good point that you mentioned SDC, whatever template that is generated by SDC is consumed by SO and the rest of the components in ONAP. Is that a part of mostly data model or information model, Andy? It's mostly data model, yeah? All the templates, all the VNFDs, NFDs.
Yeah, those are not. Right. How you're representing it is you know, anything that you're representing and that's used or passed around is represented in a data model form, like Tosca, YAML, et cetera.
Yeah.
However, the semantics, if you have common semantics across different types of data models, information models are really important for that, as well as if taking a concept and I'm representing it in multiple different domains, right? So that, as I implement it in a database form in AI versus if I have it in some Tosca YAML or if I have it in a Yang model, I can represent the common semantics through the information model and drive those data models in a common way.
And that is based on UML, MEF UML, or any UML, or which flavor of UML?
Well, no. We have ONAP is using UML. We're using Papyrus. We've adopted the same guidelines that MEF has adopted based on ONF. Etsy as well. ONF.
Okay.
Yeah, ONF had really kind of, well, it's ISAMI, right? So it's that whole group of multiple STOs that kind of got together.
Yeah, there is an IFO spec on that based on Papyrus, how do you call it? The information model that is published by TNFE.
Yeah, so we have the IFA 11 model, IFA 15 yeah. that we're applying as well. 15, yeah. So we're trying to utilize other standards where we can. But we also have to understand. I think Shankar brought it up as well. Is that information has different stages, right? So we can view things from an onboarding perspective. What do all the vendors need to agree to, as far as what a VNF looks like from an onboarding or perspective, mm-hmm. packaging, and then what happens during service design? How do you embellish that VNF for the current environment? And then what happens at instantiation time? What additional information put on that each instance mm-hmm. of a VNF? Mm-hmm. And then lifecycle management.
Exactly. Okay.
So it sounds like we have a good start to our list of topics for the next several weeks. Does anyone want to start? Can we put anyone down for next week for one or two of these presentations?
Okay, so Chris, are you looking for people to take these offline and have brainstorming with people working on these things first before feeding it back to here?
I'm looking for people to come with presentations to the architecture subcommittee. If you want to work on it offline first and then come back, that's great. If you've got some material already prepared that you've been thinking about internally, I'm looking for people to sign up for slots for that as well. So however people want to go about it, if you want to do a team presentation readout, or if you have already thought about some material and can pull something together for discussion here. I would see a lot of this as preliminary discussion, and then we try to start pulling it together at the face-to-face and then have semi-final recommendations by M0 end of November.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, I don't think I can put something meaningful by next week, but definitely by the following week. So you could schedule number 10 for the week of for whatever date. What's today's date? That's 4th, the 18th?
Yeah, okay.
So Chris, it's Rini here. I can talk about number 6, at least the current plan and architecture for Dublin.
And this would be for next week?
Yeah, I can do it. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Anyone else want to sign up? This is a good start for sure. Does anyone else want to sign up for an early presentation? And then I will post these Send this through email so people can sign up offline as well. Mm-hmm. But if there are anyone else who wants to sign up for the next couple of weeks and wants to claim it now, let me know. Yeah. Okay, very good.
Okay, great.
I'll take this as the starting point, I'll post this online later today with the recordings. Send this through email. Srini is up next week, and Chakra is the week after. For anyone else who has your name on here, if you're going to present, let me know when you'd like to do this in September and October. If you're looking to someone else to present, if you can reach out to that person and then get back to me, we'll get you scheduled. Thank you all. This was a good conversation today. And I appreciate all the feedback.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks. You.
Great. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.